Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 24th. I thought we'd kick off today with the spread in yield between the 10-year Treasury and the S&P 500 because it had been pushing on the upside at the end of 2018, but over the course of the last 20 months it has been contracting. And it encountered resistance over the course of the last week or two at the region of the trend mean and in the region of the lows from back in 2008 and 2009. So there are two big factors there. The first is that equities yield a lot more than bonds, and this is still a clear trend, so there is the potential that it's going to contract further. Therefore, there is only two ways that it can contract. It's either that stocks have to fall, which would increase their yield, or companies would have to start paying out much higher dividends, which would appear to be unlikely in the teeth of a recession, or the treasury yield would have to fall faster than it has done over the course of the last 6 months. None of those are particularly heartening developments, but what it also helps to very clearly demonstrate is that back in 2000, treasuries yielded more than 5.5% over equities. Today, they yield 119 basis points less than equities. So that's been a phenomenal move in terms of bonds. But we're at an interesting juncture because it's virtually impossible for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates any further. And there has been an incredibly inert bout of trading. The price has gone literally nowhere for the last month, and over the course of the last 6 months, it's been in a very narrow band. So when we start to think about, well, how does all of this play out? It's very easy to predict that what we're going to have is yield curve control, regardless of the fact whether the Federal Reserve is willing to engage in it yet. It's unlikely that they're going to be able to avoid it. So it means that eventually they're going to have to put a cap on how high the yield can move. And the market is already pricing in that eventuality. One of the reasons why gold has been pulling back is because right now investors are less concerned about future inflation and more concerned with near-term deflationary forces. The $600 additional unemployment benefit expired at the end of July. The additional $300 benefit that was introduced at the beginning of August expires at the end of September. So the Republicans and the Democrats in the USA are sitting down and beginning to talk again about introducing another stimulative bill. The Democrats want one in excess of $2 trillion because they want to provide assistance to the states. The Republicans are very much against providing assistance to states that have got themselves into financial trouble, and the coronavirus has really only been the motive factor in bringing it to the surface. So there is obviously room for negotiation and room for some concessions to be made on both sides. But then there is the additional point that this is not a normal year, that we're 40 days away from the presidential election. And some calculus on behalf of politicians on whether a rebound in the stock market is going to be positive or negative for their chances of electoral success is probably factoring into the negotiation process for stimulus. So, for example, gold prices pulled back in the last 3 days and were steady in here today. It's now unwound about half of its overextension relative to the trend mean. We can't rule out the possibility that it will fully unwind its overextension relative to the trend mean, but this is still a medium-term bull market, and we are right in the region of the previous peak. $1,800 was an important area of resistance back in 2011 and 12, and in an ideal world, it should offer support on this occasion. The one thing, though, that we can certainly say is that gold did fantastically well over the course of the last 2 years, and it did accelerate into the peak above 2000. So we are certainly getting an unwinding of some of that very speculative interest. But it doesn't question the reality that the global economy is still struggling to recover. And there's still a total reliance on stimulative measures to really keep economic activity ticking over. But we are also at a point where within the next 3 weeks, we should start to see some phase 3 trial results coming through for some of the vaccine candidates. So the route to exiting the lockdowns and the social distancing and the fear is out there on the horizon. So in the event that we do get positive results and that safety protocols have been followed, it's quite likely that a vaccine will be permissioned. That's likely to be very positive for markets, but convincing people to in fact take it is an entirely different question, because there is fantastic debate going on about just what the need for a vaccine is, who exactly needs to get it, and why should everyone have to take it. And then, of course, there's the additional arguments about what were the real reasons behind the lockdown, and was everybody pressured into it because of China's propaganda regime? So these are obviously questions that are going to have to be addressed at some stage. But the crux of the argument is about how do we get from lockdowns and social distancing back to normal life? And because politicians are incapable of admitting that they're wrong, then the only way that they're going to be able to open back up again is with a vaccine. That's why they keep saying that a vaccine is completely essential, because it is the mechanism through which they can walk back their social distancing protocols. What that also suggests is that economic activity should come back with a bang in 2021. So that then will raise the potential for inflationary pressures to rise. They'll rise at the minimum in the second quarter, for the simple reason that we're going to have very positive year-over-year comparisons. They're certainly also going to rise if the velocity of money picks up with the quantity of liquidity that is still floating around in the system. So all of that is out there in 2021. It, what it really suggests is that for inflationary plays, things that will do better when inflation starts to tick upwards, then this is setting us up for the next attractive buying opportunity. Now, when we then think about the stock market, well, the S&P 500 was in slightly positive territory in here today, but it still has this sequence of lower rally highs, and it's held that since the peak in early September. It is now coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average and the region of the upper side of that most recent underlying trading range. It has failed to find support in the region of the previous peak, however. So this is the biggest pullback we've seen in the context of the rebound since March, and it does suggest that if we are going to see support found, then the region of the 200-day moving average would certainly be an ideal scenario for that to start occurring. When we then think about the NASDAQ 100, well, it has rallied spectacularly over the course of the last 6 months. It's now unwinding some of that over extension and clear out performance. This is also the largest pullback we've seen since March. So, but it was in positive territory today. It also hasn't yet broken its sequence of lower rally highs, so we would still have to give the benefit of the doubt to additional risk of consolidation. But it has a lot of room in which to consolidate, And the region of the trend mean now coincides with the previous peak, and the psychological 10,000 level is not all that far away either. So there are plenty of potential psychological touchstones below where the market is right now that may offer potential support. But it's probably a little early yet to sound the all clear because the politicians are still only talking about going back to negotiating. The Federal Reserve's balance sheet has been completely inert since April. They're willing to buy the bonds that the government issues to fund the deficit, but they want more fiscal stimulus. If they don't get it, then some mechanism to provide money directly to people is probably going to have to be formulated. And the intransigence that we have in the political system in the USA is a clear political risk. And the dollar is also rebounding and continues to do well, but the reality is that it's only rallying because of some risk coming off the table, and also because there isn't a fresh new supply of dollars being provided. So that's supporting the value of the dollar relative to everywhere else, where there are more pronounced efforts underway to increase liquidity. But it's likely that the US government is going to be running a multi-trillion dollar deficit next year as well. And that's going to require a great deal of currency issuance. So while we have certainly got the potential for the dollar to continue to rally in the short term, then sustaining that rally is going to be difficult because everybody knows that there is going to have to be additional supply pumped into the market. And that does suggest that when the dollar turns around, then inflationary pressures are going to mount once more. And also, when the dollar peaks, it's going to create an attractive scenario for emerging markets. Now, the Nifty index had a downside Q reversal at the beginning of the month. It has now pulled back to break its sequence of higher reaction lows. It's right in the region of the trend mean. So if it's going to bounce, well, this would be an ideal area for that to happen. I think one significant detracting factor from that potential is that the banking sector has broken its uptrend since the lows in March. It's failed to sustain the move above the trend mean at the beginning of this month, and it is clearly underperforming. When we look at this on a weekly basis, it is miles below the peak put in at the beginning of the year. So this does look like a type 2 top formation with the failed upside break, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and right-hand extension, whereas the Nifty index has done substantially better. So it's going to be instructive as to whether the banks can rebound from the current level. Now, when we think about some of the pressures that are coming to bear on the stock market, well, there is some speculative interest coming back out, but I thought it was particularly instructive to highlight some of the better performers. The transportation average is right in the region of its peaks, and it has so far held the region of the lower side of the short-term range. So that's really quite acute outperformance in the short term. The biotech index is still firming from the region of the trend mean. And then the IPO ETF has also been really quite firm against a background where the wider market has been considerably more volatile. Well, thinking about volatility, the VIX index was in negative territory today. It hasn't quite yet been able to sustain a move above that psychological 30 level. So investors are at least willing to give temporary credence to the view that politicians can come up with some form of agreement, but perhaps not so much confidence that they're willing to buy aggressively. The Chinese market today was in negative territory, coming back down to test the lower side of the range. and it's going to have to rebound in a reasonably dynamic manner to really confirm support in this area. When we then think about the precious metal markets, well, silver prices had pulled back and were off their lows in here today, up about 22 cents. There is a short-term oversold condition, and it is at least firming above the $20 area. I do think that there's a lot of interest in buying the dips, and certainly we saw some evidence of that in here today. And the number of people willing to participate in precious metals has certainly increased as well. But we're still in a difficult environment, and this correction is still underway. We haven't had follow-through on the upside from a pause just yet. If we get upside follow-through tomorrow, well, then that would be encouraging. But it is almost entirely dependent on the potential for additional stimulative measures to be introduced. When we then think about the commodity markets on a wider basis, soybeans, for example, had rallied really quite impressively up above the 1,000-cent level, but have now pulled back below it. So certainly some unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. When we then think about the oil price, it's been really quite inert. It's still consolidating here between the trend mean and the $40 area, but it's going to have to sustain a move above that level, above the region of the trend mean, in order to clearly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. One thing, though, is that a number of the big oil producers are breaking downwards. BP was at a new low in here today. And then, of course, there is the questions about the sustainability of the dividend, even though they've already cut it. It's now yielding 12%. So that's obviously a lot of investors are looking at the potential for additional cuts. And that is also starting to filter through into speculation about ExxonMobil. They haven't cut their dividend in decades, but it is now yielding over 10%, and the share is pulling back down towards the lows. Chevron has been paying a dividend for a century, and it's been decades since they cut the dividend. It hasn't, certainly the yield has not increased to the same extent as Exxon's, but the share is pulling back down. I would say that when we think about the oil services sector, well, that's probably where a lot of pressure is being focused, because nobody wants to drill. When you've got prices that are this low, and uncertain environments in terms of growth potential for demand, and the burden of regulatory compliance, then it's unlikely we're going to get a big revolution in drilling, and that is obviously weighing on the sector overall. So I think we're in a rather interesting environment. There's a lot of uncertainty about just exactly where we are in terms of the global liquidity environment. So that's going to weigh on prices for at least the short term until we get some additional information. If we were to see, for example, an additional $2 trillion in spending coming through from the US government, well, then that would act as a very clear stimulative catalyst for just about everything, and we would then see markets quite likely to break straight back and up on the up to the highs and out to new all-time highs. The total assets of central banks has been contracting over the last week, and the pace of the advance has moderated over the last few months, but at least it is still trending higher. If the dollar's rally continues, then it's quite likely that this index will roll over and pull back towards the mean, and I think that would represent a full mean reversion for a lot of overextended assets. So the dollar is also the linchpin in terms of speculative and leveraged interest in a whole host of risk assets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.